I'd like to thank I'd like to thank Glenn K Audio Tapes for doing this for us. What I'm about ready to do is something that's very ancient. Started in probably 35 up till 39. This is the way Dr. Bob used to take his people through the steps. Now, what happens is we have gotten so far removed from the original message that I was sitting in a meeting on where I'm from, and I'd rather not mention the name because it's just it's a place that has the huge dark tunnel AA, and it's where I originally got sober. I actually heard a guy say, "Well, you know, Doug, we heard people like you. We've heard these fads," and it so broke my heart. Not that, you know, I know they're talking about me. I mean, that's fine. But that I said to him, is it the original, and this guy had 25 years, I said, has the original message from AA been so far removed that now the original message is considered a fad? I mean, we are a few percentage here of people taken through the work. I mean, really through the work. Not talking about dogs, not talking about cats, not talking about the psychological stuff. Another thing that happened as Pete and Chris were talking about was in the 50s, and it started in 1950, where the courts started sending people to our meetings, which is fine. But now you have, you know, Uncle Fred and Aunt Fanny, and one of them die, and they get very lonely, and they start drinking a little too much. But they're, you know, moderate drinkers at best, hard drinkers. They get a DUI. They go into court. Or somebody sends them to court, and what happens? They say, you need to go to meetings. Well, they come to you all. I mean, this fellowship, this happiness, this gayness, as they call it, in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they don't want to leave. And so they come in, and now a real alcoholic, low-bottom drunk like me, who even smells alcohol and gets that phenomenon of craving, that's the alcoholism, the phenomenon of craving, and this guy says to me, hey, young whippersnapper, take your time. Relax. It'll all be okay. You know, and I'm sitting there, and he's telling me not to drink, go to meetings. I'm like this. I'm like, okay, I'm happening, and I'm freaking out inside. I'm dying inside because I'm a real alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic. And then I go out and drink, and what happens? You all come in, you give me these big open arms, you needed to go out and drink. That's a bunch of bull. You don't need to go out and drink, okay? And then the guy tells me, well, you know, Doug, maybe you really didn't want it. And I could have been locked up and hooked up to a lie detector test, and I would have passed it with flying colors. I didn't want it. I would have died for it. But I have this guy telling me that I didn't want it. So what do? I don't drink and I go to meetings. And I take my time. I go out and drink. I don't drink and I don't drink and I go to meetings. I go out and drink again. And then I put a bullet in my head. Okay? So what's happening is that they're killing more people than smallpox. Really. I mean, to be quite honest. So when I got into this gig of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not drink and I went to meetings. And I went to 3 meetings a day, and I was unemployed at the time, and they would take me to all these jails and these institutions, and then after 90 days, I was going to pick up my little trinket, my little door prize, my gift prize for not drinking alcohol. It's like giving a cowboy a prize for, you know, having hemorrhoids and not riding a horse. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. But anyway, so I take this little trinket, and I'm waiting for the green trinket or yellow or purple, whatever we give out, I don't know. And I remember the seat I was sitting in. I mean, and then I was going to Five Point Liquors. And let me tell you about Five Point Liquors in Florida. If you're too drunk to get out of your car, we have a drive-thru. Welcome to Florida. So the left side of my car is destroyed. Right? Because I'm always going, here's Dougie. Hey. Doug couldn't get out of the car? No. So they give me a gallon of vodka. All right, we didn't have plastic bottles back then. I've been sober for quite some time. We had these big, heavy bottles, and I went all the way down to like pop-off. It was $2.50 a gallon or something. Woo! So anyway, I pick up my little door prize, and I'm real excited, and I'm running out the door, and my first sponsor, and he's my sponsor to this day, Greg H. from Hoboken, New Jersey. Yeah, say more. All right? From this little island in Florida, kind of trips me as I'm going out, stands in front of me, and he says, listen, he says, you've been acting a little more weird than usual. He says, so if you're going to do what I think you're going to go do, don't tell people that AA didn't work for you. And I said, what? He goes, well, you never worked the program of recovery. And I said, come back again. This is the three meeting a day, going to institutions and jails and seeing all these losers because you're telling me to do this, getting kidnapped. I mean, he says, no. You've worked the fellowship and you're the mayor. He says, there's a fellowship. And he says, there's a program of recovery. You have never worked a program of recovery. Now, if you are interested in working the program of recovery and receiving a spiritual awakening, whoa, wait. I'm an atheist. Did I tell you all that? I'm an atheist. And she says, well, whatever. He says, come over to my house on Tuesdays and Thursdays with this book. And as you can tell, it's a little tore up, as we say down south, a little tore up. And the pages are removable. And he says, come with a highlighter and a pen. And I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do it at 8 o'clock at night. Come 8:01. Don't even knock on my door. You're wasting my time. You lie to me once, you're out. Cool? And he walked away. And I was like, shit, whatever. So I hop in my car, a little jalopy. I'm going to Five Point Liquors. I'm ready to just, because now I'm going up sober. I don't really know what these people look like sober. So I'm about ready to go get my bottle. And I just sit at the light, and I'm thinking, and the light turned red right before it. All right, God intervening. So I said to myself, all right. I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm talking to nobody because I don't believe in anything, right? I'm an aerospace engineer by education, so it's all mathematics. It all makes sense to me, and God had no part in this. So I make a left, and I go home. And I show up at his house on Tuesday, which started the rest of my life, And it's a pretty amazing story, and you're going to hear some wonderful things. Also, if you're afraid of flying, I'm a retired airline captain from an airline. I almost said the airline once, and you know what I mean? To watch the stock just plummet. Drive it to Washington with one eye. Just get me on the airplane. I'll be okay. I swear to God. And then I get on the airplane. I'm like, you know, I'm looking around, and the captain comes in. And he goes, yo, dude, flight's out at 7. It's 5 in the morning. And I'm like, just getting ready, Captain. Sunglasses on. You know what I mean? You want a drink? You want a cup of coffee? No, because I would be like this. You know what I mean? So I was just, yeah. Anyway, I got a few thousand hours doing that. So what I did was I worked the steps. I got to the ninth step. I completed my ninth step. Surrendered myself to the state of New Jersey for jail time. Called up my airline at that time, and they were probably like, you're doing what? I got to go away for a little while, you know, a little vacation behind bars. But anyway, I'll tell you about that when I get to the night stuff. I got a huge spiritual awakening. Huge. Went on a I want God binge. And for 5 years, found my God, and have not had the desire to drink since. I celebrated 13 years last Friday. I'm always going to look in the back at my wife just to make sure she'll shake her head, because sometimes I could just expand and exaggerate, as she calls it. My wife's from Italy. She goes, exaggeration for Douglas. So everything she says is an A at the end of it. But one thing good I did get at the airlines is that I picked her up on my flight. I was the captain, and she was going to Rome, and picked her up. So. Yeah, good things for the airlines, wasn't it? Okay, so what we're going to do here, it's going to go pretty rapid. So what I would like to show you is, and what I would like to introduce to you, is how I was introduced by the gentleman who is the archivist for Dr. Bob's house. And he flew out to Sarasota and showed me the history of this, and then I took it and ran with it, about time frames and about the big book and how to take people through it. Now, people say you're going to have a lot of questions. How could you do this thoroughly? It says thoroughly. It says, do you know what I remember my fourth step? My 22-page fourth step. You know what I remember from that? The thing. The one thing. We all got the thing. I only remember the thing. The next 4 hours were blank. I remember I told him the thing, and then I looked at him like, am I a freak? Do you think I'm a freak? And he looked at me, he told me his thing, and I was like, you're sick. You're sick. So anyway, but I really, and that's why it's very important to have somebody who knows how to do the steps. And imagine, I couldn't imagine telling the thing to the priest. He would also, when I was 10, I was thrown out of a confessional. So that's how bad I got. So the priest was like, what? My mother's like, Like, I'm walking out the door. Get out, stay out, never come back, heathen. You know what I mean? That's my Catholic experience. And then I went to Catholic high school and they asked me not to come back. Little old me, ding, halo. So, anyway, once again, I'd like to thank Glenn K. Audio Tapes, and you could pick this up at www.glennkaudiotapes.com. And this is going to be a wonderful weekend. So what we're going to do here is we have the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are going to open up to, yes, table of contents. Keep up. Share with your next door neighbor if you cannot keep up, okay? And you can highlight this. Now, I'm going to get up, and I'm going to pace as I do because I drink too much coffee. So bear with me. I guess I just pull this like this, right? Now, on the table of contents, I always wondered, you know, where are the steps? Well, they're right in the table of contents, and I'm going to show you. But before I do that, how many people have heard of permanent forever sobriety? Permanent forever, forever. Mentions it twice in the Big Book. Very good. Forever. I don't know, one day at a time, whatever. I'm here forever, forever and ever and ever. Contingent. It's always contingent. There's always a little catch in the Big Book. I was told this. Bill Wilson was a very, very good businessman. Okay? Not when he was drinking. He wasn't a good businessman, but he was a good businessman. And what he did was he TM'd this thing over here, the circle and triangle. So you have a circle and triangle on your neck. I thought it was beautiful. I think it's beautiful. And that's all I thought it was just kind of like, wow, that's pretty. I had no idea what it meant. And my sponsor told me this. He says, listen, if you do this circle and triangle the way I'm going to show you how to do the circle and triangle, which I'm going to introduce to you today, something new, maybe not, you will never drink again. And I thought, whoa, that's pretty ballsy. Never drink again. Hi, my name is Doug. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I have found a solution. I'm never going to drink again. And then I will just leave the meeting and watch that thing go off like a firecracker. Right. Hold the door. So he TM'd this. Now, as you notice, in the beginning of the Big Book, which I will show you, there's no more circle and triangle. I had one, and my car was stolen with all that stuff in the back. Yeah, that hurt. So now I don't have one. But we had to stop using it because there was a place out of Minnesota that started making pillowcases with circle and triangles. Isn't that nice? And actually, Bill did not come up with this concept. Okay? What this meant was thousands and thousands of years ago, it was called mind, body, soul. Everybody understand that? Mind, body, and soul. They believed if you have the mind, the body, and the soul together, you would be safe and protected in the middle of the triangle, which they would call then the universe. Right? Mind, body, soul. Mind, I go to work, I work hard. My wife and I have a very large company. We're very blessed with 6,500 gracious employees. And so we work very hard at that. The mind part worked. The body is, I'm a wrestling coach of a high school. We work out every day. And the soul part is, and if you haven't done this with your mate, I invite you to do this, is we wake up in the morning together, pray, and meditate. And it's beautiful. And I'll show you how that works. And that forms a bond like you can never have. So we work the universal mind, body, soul. That's what we do, okay? Now, let me show you what Bill Wilson thought. He said, recovery. Now, remember that I am an aerospace engineer, and I cannot spell, so please forgive me. Recovery, unity, and service. Recovery, unity, and service. So what I normally do is I put that right on the front page where it says Alcoholics Anonymous. How many men and women have recovered? Okay, so that's where my circle and triangle is, right when I open it up. So when I'm teaching somebody, of which I'm showing you just another way of bringing somebody through the steps, somebody who needs an injection of God ASAP. So I put that in there. Got it? Under recovery, what they're talking about is the 12 steps. How do you work your 12 steps daily in your life? I used to love this. I'd hear these people in these rooms, I worked at 12 steps daily in my life and I woke up. How do you do that? How do you, I just don't think. I just don't link, or drink, whatever. They come up with all this stuff and I'm sitting there like, what? You know, I didn't understand what he meant. And so, and he didn't understand what he meant either. What I did is I gave you the 12 steps here, and there's a in the 10th step, there's a form in the back that I fill out every night. Okay, the inventory list. We all heard about continue to take personal inventory. Continued, meaning daily, forever, a lifetime, as it talks about. I have that list here. I was just too lazy to get on page 86 and looking right out the questions. I put it here for you, okay? And I'll show you how I do that every night. So that's the 12 steps of recovery. Then we go unity. I do a minimum of 2 meetings a week, but I invite people over my house either on Saturdays and Sundays. I sit there from 10 to 2. If you want to come over, I will bring you through the steps between 10 and 2. Okay? Ma'am?
The address.
The address. And then the service work, okay? I started a meeting, started a few meetings. I also have a home group, and I am blessed to travel around the world now and speak at AA conferences, so, and here with you all. I thoroughly enjoy that. I do. I travel for a living, so it's kind of exhausting because I got off a plane from San Francisco, and I just kind of like walked on this plane, and I'm in Vermont freezing my ass off. Oops, excuse me. And so it gets kind of tiring, but, you know, when you're in Denmark and you see a guy come up and say, "Hey, is this you?" And I'm like, oh, my God, how many lives have I touched? You know, how many lives have you all touched? How many lives have we all touched? Isn't that amazing? I'm also going to do a little motivational speaking for you, of which I do for a living, because I don't believe that we're recovering scumbags, or maybe, whatever. But I believe that we have unlimited power inside us all, right here, unlimited. And I'm going to tell you through business, through love, through family, how I was able to create the life that I desire. And my life today is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I have created that because my loving God has given me an unbelievable universe, and it was like a disc, just like that. It's a disc. And he says, whatever you want, I will not judge you. Just play on this disc. And I do. And I do. I play very hard on this disc, and I will show you how I created all this, okay? So we have recovery, 12 steps, 2 meetings, plus sponsoring people on the weekend, and then service work, of which I go around. Got that? Now, I want you to check this out in the beginning, right here, where it says, the story, how many thousands of women have, and I want you to box in, and when I say box in, I mean this, recovered. Why do you think I'd want you to box in recovered? Hi, my name's Doug, I'm an alcoholic, I'm a recovered alcoholic. You have to see how that draws people to drink in AA. Now, it's funny how we're trying to hide it on the cover page of our book. And no one sees it. It's right there, recovered. Do you know it says recovering once, and it's into wives, used in a third person. It's always recovered. Always, 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 always. Did I say always? All right. Now, what I want you to do is turn to the table of contents, and I want you to box in like this. From the preface to chapter 3, and then I want you to write step 1. So when people say, hey, where are the steps in the big book? You could go, oh, well, check it out. Table of contents. Step 1. 30 Roman numeral pages, 30 regular pages, 60 pages of the first 164 to admit you're an alcoholic. So there was a great question somebody asked here, and I wish I could repeat it, but I cannot because I have ADD and I have like the memory of a gnat. So, but it went something like, how did it go? Oh, how would you be able to walk somebody through if they really didn't want to, if they didn't think they're an alcoholic? By the time I get done with that, they're either saying yes or they're saying, what am I doing in your house? What's for dinner? You know what I mean? And I don't keep them. I don't keep hard drinkers around. I say, I love you very much, but you would kill more of us than smallpox. Please don't sponsor anybody. Come to open meetings. Love to have you. Come over to my house, whatever you want. But you need to leave. And I've done that. I can't tell you how many times. And they're great people, and they're good in society, and they stop drinking, and or they moderated. Moderated? Does anybody here understand what that word means? Not my wife. Anybody understand that? My wife said half it. You understand moderation? That is phenomenal, and we'll talk about that, because there are people that can still moderate. Maybe they may think so, maybe not. Maybe they can. Who knows? Right? But if it is, they'll be shocked into this, whoa, I got to slow down. This ain't going to happen anymore. And they stop. And they just kind of moderate. whatever. So anyway, then we have chapter four. This is step two. We the agnostics, right? Me, Mr. Atheist. I wasn't even an agnostic. I remember there was one time I was overnight in a Key West and I was drinking. Imagine that, doing the Duval crawl. And I was with a whole bunch of flight attendants. And one of the flight attendants had a father who was a Baptist minister. And we went off. And I took out a piece of paper and mathematically I showed her how God didn't exist. And she just stood there like this. Like, how did you do that? Because I thought about this stuff. Okay, I think about this stuff. That's how crazy it is. All right? We the agnostics. So that was me. Now what I'd like you to do is go 5 to 7. 5 to 7. That's steps 3 through 12. 5 through 7 is steps 3 through 12. Okay, that's where steps 3 through 12 are. And then 8 through 11, right? 8 through 11, they did not have Al-Anon back then. This is our Al-Anon book. This is where the Al-Anons used to work, written by Bill Wilson. So it's very generous to us. Be kind, be gentle, be, you know, we're coming in, kicking things over, black eye. Be gentle to him, you know. Get up, get your ass out of the house. You kidding me? All right. So steps 8 through 11. I call that practicing these principles in all my affairs. Practicing these principles in all my affairs. Okay. Now, when you own a company our size, you run into situations where sometimes you could just kind of be like, well, that's a gray area. Right, Valeria? That's a gray area. There's really no gray area. I don't live in a gray area. There's no gray area. I mean, there was something that happened, and this guy's coming after me like, yeah, you know, and you know, he's an attorney and partner. And I mean, it's just ugly and coming out, and I just, you know, gave him what we were supposed to give him with no, just here, this is it. You know, here's your percentage of the company. Get out. Here's your money. Leave. And so there's no gray area. Yeah, we could have went to court. I could have beat him. And he would have got nothing. But that's ridiculous. Are we going to live like that? So when they say practice these principles in all these affairs, my wife and I own the largest nightclub and restaurant. This is how free I am. In Charlottesville, Virginia. Chris was there with me. He loves it. We all love it. It's great. Killer place. Beautiful. Amtrak train station. We refurbished all 8,000 square foot of it many years ago. And there's our contractor who had 10 years sobriety. So I thought, well, this guy's honest. Yeah, I know. Yeah. The old timers in the back are like, you are kidding me. I had like 5 years sobriety. I was an idiot. But anyway, so all of a sudden I start getting these invoices. I'm like, yo, dude, you're double billing. He's like, dude, it's just business. I'm like, you're fired. And what about the 12 steps? Oh, well, it's okay. Let me get this straight. I just want to make sure I got this straight. From 9 to 5, screw me. When you come into the meeting, we're like, no, it doesn't work that way. Okay? Practice these principles in all our affairs. What I'd like you to do to open up to the preface. Open up to the preface. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you where I'm highlighted so that when you start taking people through the big book here, you're going to hit the meaty areas that are just going to take them through. Now, how are they going to be consistent? You will meet with them once a week, twice a week, whatever you want to do. They will show you their written inventory and wait till you see this big dink bowl go off on their head. Truly, truly amazing. Okay? So we're going to look at the preface. Now, when you go to the preface, you're going to notice there's indentations. I am not an English genius, so I'm talking down to me, not to you. I didn't know that meant paragraphs. So anyway, we have the paragraphs. If you turn the page and there's no indentation, that means it doesn't start a paragraph. So when I say, give me second paragraph, count one indentation, two indentation. Got it? That's the way it was taught to me. That's what I learned about paragraphs. I know, I'm a rocket scientist, but I can't write a letter. So I hired somebody to do that for me. It works. Okay, so let's go to the second paragraph. Second paragraph, I'd like you to underline this. It says, because this book has become, and I want you to circle, the basic text. Now, what's a textbook? A textbook is something that should be taught, correct? It says, because this book has become the basic text for our society and has helped such a large number of alcoholics and men and women to recovery, there exists a sentiment against any radical changes made in it. Textbook should be taught. Let's check this out. I give you my 737 flight manual. Sir, I'll give you my 737 flight manual. You look like a smart guy. Not that you have to be smart to fly, because I did it. And then I say, go home and read this. Tell me what you think. And then he comes back, and he says, pretty airplane, nice exits. I said, okay, get in the left seat. Let's spark it up. We're going to L.A. And you're like, I was in rehab at 2 days sober, or maybe like a couple hours. It seemed like 2 days. And this guy comes up to me, and I heard him talk, and I was like, "Hey, could you be my temporary sponsor? Temporary? That's like, you know, temporary sobriety, whatever." So he's like, "Yeah, man. Here's this book. Read it and tell me what you think." Well, I was in a 28-day program, folks. They kept me in for 72. So I wasn't in the best of health. So I said, sure, I could go do that. So I go to my room and I read it. I call him up. I'm like, "What do you think?" "Well, poorly written, coming from an engineer who can't write a letter. And that guy, Bill, loser. I have nothing in common with it." "Well, read it until you tell me what you think." I read it again, and we kept them going on the circle. He wanted me to teach him the big book. That's why people do that. "Tell me what you think." "Well, I don't understand it." "It's a textbook. It needs to be taught. Make sense?" So the more we teach this, the less we'll get watered down. We stop teaching this. This, for me, is an easier, softer way. Maybe because I'd have a checklist, and I'd have a first officer. Whoever invented first officers is the best things in sliced bread. So anyway, I'd have a first officer. He would read. I would check. He would read. I would check. He would read. I would check. Never, ever, ever, ever did we make a mistake when he would read. I would check. It was on the last leg of a 4-day trip. My time. No one ever flew that leg. That was my leg. And I'd be like, "Hey, young whippersnapper, just don't worry. I got it. Get us off the gate. Get us off the gate." And all of a sudden, I'm at the end of the runway. Right? We turn onto the runway. Hit all our throttles. You hear, I forgot to put the flaps down. Why? I didn't do the checklist. Just like this. This is a textbook. It's a checklist. It's a checklist for our sobriety. Okay? Make sense to everybody? All right. I want you to turn to the next page. Forward to the first edition. This came out in 1939. Okay? Alcoholics Anonymous started June 10th, 1935. The book came out in April 1939. These dates are important. I'll tell you why. It says, highlight or underline, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have..." There's that word again. "Recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body." The mind obsession. When they start talking about this, they're going to talk mind obsession, body craving. Has anybody had that? Mind obsession. "I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. Maybe I got a little out of control." Crystal would hit Chris about 12, 1 o'clock and be like, "Maybe it wasn't that bad that I fell off the bar. I shit myself. I peed myself. Maybe it's not really that bad. Just one toddy. I'll have one drink." Yeah, right, whatever. So the mind obsession, and then you put it in, and I'll show you what a doctor from South Miami, Happy Hills, showed me. Then you get the body craving. "To show other alcoholics precisely." What does the word precisely mean? Exactly. How we have, there's that hidden word, recovered, and then I want you to circle. It's the main purpose. We have an object of this book and a purpose. The main purpose of this book. The main purpose is to show you precisely exactly how we have recovered. All right? So why aren't we screaming this from the hilltops? I don't get it. And if anyone can answer that, especially old timers in the back of the room hitting spitballs at me, please let me know. Now, this is what I was told. Are you ready? When my wife drinks, I need another one of these. When my wife drinks, this is the way she drinks. You and I will not understand this. The doctor told me from Happy Hills, it comes in as alcohol. I said, I understand that. Turns into, and he had to talk a little down to me, turns into a formaldehyde type substance, a poison. It makes you like, woo, right? Turns into the basics, barley and hops, comes into H2O, and then she goes to the bathroom. All right? Follow me? Not with us. Comes in as alcohol, turns in formaldehyde, she gets this poison, she says, whoa, that's it. She shuts down. She leaves a half a glass of wine. Don't know how she does it, still haven't figured out all these years, but she leaves that half a glass of wine. So, now, what happens with us? Comes in as alcohol, turns to formaldehyde. How many people have heard, you've crossed the line? You have crossed the line. Well, we really have. There's two genes that you can cross without even doing anything. My grandmother died from cancer. The cancer gene just opened up. She died. Never smoked in her life, okay? And the addiction gene that we have, that I drank myself into that, but I remember the first day I had it, it was my God, wasn't it? It was our spiritual awakening. It was my spiritual awakening, at least. So what happens is once you cross that line they're talking about, you can never go back. It's like losing a leg they talk about in the big book. You can never go back. It forms a huge T name. Starts off with a T and goes all the way across. It's a codeine-like substance. It gives you that more, the 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 more. We call this in Alcoholics Anonymous the phenomenon of craving. If you do not have the phenomenon of craving, you are not an alcoholic. Got it? You are not an alcoholic if you do not have the phenomenon of craving. All right. I've seen hard drinkers that don't understand that you can't stop. They can stop or moderate. I could not. I have the phenomenon of craving. That's the mind-body thing they're talking about here. Okay? The mind obsession, the body craving. All right, let's turn to the next page. Forward to the second edition. Forward to the second edition states this. If you go to the first paragraph and you count down three lines, it starts off as that every alcoholic who journeys finds the fellowship. Circle the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at his destination. Now, we have two things. Folks, let's not get these confused. I want to make sure I make this perfectly clear right now. We have a fellowship, and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous are the meetings. I do enjoy coming to AA meetings in New Jersey, Charlottesville, Virginia, and a few other states. But I love it here because I'm not drained when I walk in. It's not this, well, I trudge. I couldn't walk down a beer aisle. The guy's got 25 years. Couldn't walk down a beer aisle. I heard some lady say, I can't even watch TV. Oh, my God. It just, I'm like, okay. The fellowship. That's the fellowship. All right. Now we have the program. The program of recovery are the 12 steps. Follow me? We have a fellowship, which everybody's working. Don't drink, go to meetings. Didn't drink today. And then we have the program of recovery, which is the 12 steps. This is where we got removed. Okay? What happened to meeting makers make it? Do we have any relapsers in here that are willing to admit that they're relapsers? One relapser right here. When did you come into Alcoholics Anonymous? I'll show you how you get this right out of their head real quick. Just give me a year. All right, 2002. Watch this. So I go 2002. Did you work the steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? No. All right. Did you sponsor people out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Did you go to meetings?
At first.
Yes. Okay, so let's say you got drunk, 2003. Right? 2003. Did you work the steps of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous?
No.
All right. Did you sponsor people? Did you go to meetings?
No.
You didn't even go to meetings then? So then you even stopped doing that. Now it's 2004. All right? And we keep going on. And this is what I normally see. No, no, yes. So I circle. I thought meeting makers make it. And the light goes, dink. Maybe they don't make it. 100% of the time. But I say to them, the good news is you have never failed. How could you fail something you don't know? So you've never worked the program of recovery. So you have not failed. Follow me? You have never failed. Ever. Nor have I ever seen anyone fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So we're going to talk about the path today. Don't you want to know what the path is? I did a lot of studying to find out what that path was. They couldn't have just made it easy for me, right? All right, so I want you to turn to the next page. I want you to turn to the next page. Now, my next page is XVI. Are we still on the same pages together? XVI, okay. Now, I want you to go down to the first paragraph. And it says, prior to his journey to Akron, this is Bill Wilson. It says, underline this, the broker, Bill Wilson, had worked hard with many alcoholics on the theory that only an alcoholic can help an alcoholic, but he had succeeded only in keeping sober himself. Right there, in the left-hand side, write WWO, working with others. Working with others kept Bill Wilson sober, okay? Why on God's green earth would I tell you to wait a year to wait? What happens after a year? 366 days. We can start dating. We can get a divorce. Quit our job. We can start sponsoring people? Is that crazy? Thank God Bill only waited 6 days before he started sponsoring people. Or else all this would not have flourished, correct? That's the first one. All right, now I want you to go down what you just read. I want you to go down another three lines or four lines, and it says he, in the same paragraph, underline, he suddenly realized that in order to save himself, folks, this is life and death. In order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic. So if this is life and death, for me to work with another alcoholic, why am I going to tell you to wait a year? If you have nothing to give, then of course you have nothing to give. But if you have worked these steps, if you're doing daily inventory, if you're praying and meditate, get out there and bring somebody through the book. When I was done, my sponsor grabbed this guy. He may still be alive, as Chris said. He may not. And he put me together and he says, show this guy what I just showed you. Don't tell him anything of what you think or your opinion. And I just went in here and we went over each paragraph. That wasn't born yet. Okay? And that's all I did. And then I came up with my old style. All right? I don't even know if the guy got a spiritual awakening. It's been so long ago. All right. I want you to go to the second paragraph on that page, and it starts off with underline. This physician. Now they're going to talk about Dr. Bob. This physician had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcohol dilemma, but had what? He had failed. He did not drink, go to church. Didn't drink, go to church. Didn't drink, go to church. I was atheist. I went to the Episcopal Church. That's how bad I wanted this. I was the cook. There was one morning, they sat me in the corner. They wouldn't let me touch knives because I was still hungover. I reeked of alcohol. I didn't even believe in God. And I'm cooking at an Episcopal church at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. Let's go. You got to go cook. Right? What was I thinking? I'm helping old ladies across the street. I got to get sober. Let me just do a good cheat. All right. So I want you to go down to that. It's the second paragraph. Go to the last sentence on that page. And it starts off with this. This seemed to prove when Bill Wilson met Dr. Bob and told him about alcoholism, okay, the disease of alcoholism and the spiritual cure, this seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work, coming to Vermont for a weekend after being out on the road for 3 weeks, strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital. What does vital mean? To permanent recovery. Permanent, did I read that right? Oh, yeah. Permanent recovery, forever. Working with others will give you permanent recovery. Why am I going to tell you to wait a year? Has anybody figured this one out yet? Permanent, mentions it twice. Talks about being immune to alcohol and permanent recovery. Permanent recovery. Mention that in a meeting. Oh my God, that would be ugly. Okay? Now, I want you to turn the page. Check out numbers. Mathematician up here, love numbers. Ready for these numbers? Maybe not. Someone just hit a spitball at me. They don't believe. One of these dark tunnel AAers. No offense to any of you out there. Okay, check this out. We started June 1935, right? Book came out in April 39. Is this permanent? Dry erase. No. 19. Ooh, nice. 35, June to April. Showing off my Italian there, honey. Thank you. All right. So we have June of 1935. We have April of 1939. How long is that? About 4 years? 4 years. 4 years, 100 people get sober. The book comes out when? April of 1939. Right? So it says here, if you go up to the top of the page, in that paragraph there, the last sentence in that paragraph, it says, by the end of 1939, does everybody see that? By the end of 1939, it was estimated that 800 people were sober. The end of 1939, December 1939, when the book came out, 7 months later, 7 months, 800 people were sober. What does that tell you about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? 7 months, 4 years, 100. 7 months, 800. Follow me? So if you go down about six lines on the first paragraph of that page, it says by March 1941, 2000. So now we have December 1939, March 1941, which is how long? 15 months or 1 year and 2 months. 1.2, 2,000 people are sober. Okay, it shows you the book works. So what happened? Why did we get so far removed from this book? That's the thing that frightens me. It's because a lot of hard drinkers came in. And when the hard drinkers came in, they didn't want to read this book. They didn't need to be taught. And then all of a sudden, all this verbal communication came. I want you to turn the page. On my page, is still XX. Does everybody still have XX? On XX, if you go to the top of the page, which is not starting a paragraph, but the top of the page, you count down four lines. It starts off with, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, define really tried. I'm talking working the steps, doing daily inventory, sponsoring others, praying and meditating. Would you think that's really trying? Yep. How many people got sober at once? 50% got sober at once. Okay? 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up at some relapses. 25%. That's a 75% one-year sobriety rate. How do we know that? They used to have to sign to come in. I checked out these numbers, started a meeting in Sarasota, and had people sign in. We had a little over a 75% one-year sobriety rate. And we did exactly this. Do you know what it is now? 8 to 13. And Peter probably can give you better numbers on that than I. But that's the last one I heard from a guy who runs a big house. Big house in West Palm Beach. 8 to 13% from 75. What happened? We got taken away, didn't we? We got taken away. Let's turn to the doctor's opinion. We're going to go through the doctor's opinion. The doctor's opinion. We have Dr. Silkworth. His name was Silkworth. We got Dr. Silkworth. His name is... Oh, well, that might work. Yeah. Can everybody see that? Could you all still see that? Genius. Yeah. Rocket scientist. Wild E. Coyote. Super genius. All right, we got the doctor's opinion. The doctor's opinion. What it is it's Dr. Silkworth. Dr. Silkworth. Right? He was in Towns Hospital. I believe history is very important. Okay, he had 20 years experience. And I saw in writing between him and Bill, he had a 2% one-year sobriety rate. 2%. Okay? That's not too good, I don't think. Being a mathematician, it's not that good. Dr. Silkworth was one of our biggest cheerleaders. He really was. And I hurt his name pretty bad, too, being one of our cheerleaders. They thought that we had this thing called a moral problem. Right? We have a moral problem. We just need to be nicer people. Well, hell, I cooked at a church and I was an atheist. How much more nicer than you're going to get than that? 6 o'clock in the morning walking into a church. Give me that knife. You know, ready to cut it up. So what I want you to do is I want you to go to, on that page, a doctor's opinion, 1, 2, 3, the fourth paragraph. It starts off with, in the course of his third treatment, so Bill did not get this the first time. In the course of his third treatment, he acquired certain ideas. Okay, the certain ideas that he was were what? It was the Oxford group, absolutely, which turned into the 12 steps. Okay, the four absolutes, which turned into the 12 steps. So it says, and Ebby showed him that. So he a possible means of recovery. As part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must circle, one of the 82 must circle, do likewise with others. You must work with others. How many people come in here and they get sober and they start feeling good and they just don't go to meetings and then they give you a telephone number? I don't want your telephone number. What I do is when I see a newcomer, he's like fresh meat. I mean, whoop, I'm up to him and I get his telephone number, just like they used to do. And I call him the next day and say, hey, Bob, how you doing? My name's Doug. You know, I was the obnoxious guy. And I try to get him laughing. I'm the obnoxious guy. I got your number. How you doing? You want to go to a meeting tonight? Where are we going to go? What's happening? What's going on? You know, it's like it throws them all off. Because if I'm going to wait for this dude to call me, I'm going to wait a long time. Right? So that's the way they used to do it. So that's the way I do it. So that's working with others. WWO, working with others. Why am I going to tell you to wait a year? Think about it. Part of your rehabilitation is to work with others. Does this make sense to you? Oh, I wish I would tell you that I make this stuff up, but I don't. All right, turn to the next page. It says here that if you go to the top of that page, down three lines or two lines, these men may well have a remedy. What's a remedy? If you have a remedy for something, that means you have a solution, right? This is a doctor of 20 years saying this to these bunch of drunks, that these drunks have a remedy. They have a remedy for thousands of such situations. You may rely absolutely on anything they say. That's huge, isn't it? If you go down to the second paragraph, and now this blew me away, and this is where the doctor from Happy Hills in Miami showed me, says, the doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us as laymen. When he drew that out to me, it was like something just cleared and I wasn't a loser anymore. I said, oh my God, I get it. I understand. I was only 31 or 2, I think, when I got sober, 32. And so now that made sense. So I wasn't morally inept. I wasn't, you know, this recovering scumbag. I was just, you know, a guy who, once I drank, I processed alcohol differently, which made it virtually impossible for me to stop or moderate at all. And if I did, I was restless, irritable, and discontent. Now, I only tried that once, you know. I got to stop. That was terrible. I get people calling me up drunk. You want me to stop? I'm like, are you crazy? Call me in the morning after you're done passing out. Right? I'm not going to do that to you. All right, I want you to go to one, to the third paragraph. It says here, underline, though we work out our solution, which is the answer, though we work out our solution on a spiritual as well as an altruistic plane. So they're saying the solution to alcoholism is spiritual, 12 steps, and altruistic. Altruistic means doing good for others without expecting anything in return. I expect absolutely nothing from you here. Nothing. I hope, I wish, I pray that you go out and that you show others what you have learned through Chris and Pete and I today. That's what I wish, but I expect nothing from you all at all. Okay? It says here in the next page, first paragraph, this is the doctor writing this. Imagine this, doctor, back in the 30s writing, the subject presented in this book seems to me of paramount importance to those afflicted with alcoholic addiction. Okay? Now, I want you to go 1, 2, 3, down to the fourth paragraph on that page. It says, many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book came under my care, and that's Bill Wilson in this hospital. And while here, he acquired some ideas. And I just make it easy, so I call it the steps, which he put into practical experience. How fast? Circle at once. It's a time frame. At once. Did he wait a day? Did he wait a year? Wait a year. Do a step a month. Relax. Take it easy, young whippersnapper. You're moving too fast. Moving too fast. I don't know my ass from a hole in the ground over here. I want to kill this person over here. What are you talking about, moving too fast? I felt like I had lead weights on, all right, until I did the steps. Then I had a solution. Then I felt great. And that's why we keep going out. It's not that we're losers and we can't get it. You know, I love getting these guys because they all come to my house on Saturday. Everybody who can't handle these people on this island that I live on, go see Doug. He'll take care of you. You know what I mean? And then I jam them through these steps, and this beaming guy comes back, and they're like, what's up with Fred? Doug healed him with his hand. That's another. I heal with hands. Did I tell you that? I didn't tell you that one. All my sponsees think that they have to stick up for me. Stick up for you. Some guy came in. I just almost popped one in the nose. He said you were healing people with hands. I swear to God, I fell off. I fell off my chair. I said, you are kidding me. He says, no. No, you want to heal me? So anyway, because think about this. You have 25 years of sobriety, whatever you want to call it. You have 25 years of not drinking, okay? And then you have this guy come in, and he's starting to preach about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and about the way the first 100 used to do it. He's a little educated in this part, and you have no idea what this guy's saying. So what are you feeling? You're feeling threatened. Although I don't come across threatened anymore. Trust me. When I got my spiritual awakening, I was talking to Vinny about this. I got my spiritual awakening. Oh, my God. I was, you're a loser. I know why you failed. Loser, loser. No steps, right? And I go to my sponsor. How come no one wants me to sponsor him? You're an asshole. So, I'm having an ADD moment, so just bear with me for a second. I was talking about prayer. Oh, so anyway. So back to the practical experience at once. What they wanted to do, thank God we didn't wait for Bill to wait a year before we sponsored Dr. Bob, right? When he was able to get up and walk, it was 6 days. And he went to the next room and he started doing this. All right? So that's huge. Let's turn to the next page. First paragraph starts off with, we believe. I want you to put a little box. And this is step one. Powerless. This is the definition of powerless, and I'm going to show you something else. I'm going to read it to you. We believe, and so suggest, when they say the word we, they're talking about the first 100 who wrote this book, and so suggests a few years ago that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. This circle, phenomenon of craving, that's where it starts, and it's going to start talking about it through the rest of the book. Phenomenon of craving. You don't have it, you can't know the handshake. No one. Show that beautiful young Italian in the back room our secret handshake. She cannot know it. She doesn't know it. She's not an alcoholic. She's not going to be an alcoholic. Well, I don't know the way your family drinks over in Italy. Well, anyway. All right. The phenomenon of craving. The phenomenon of craving is what differentiates us. The phenomenon of craving, limited to this class, meaning us, and never occurs in the average temperate drinker like her in the back. The allergies, the allergic type, can never safely use alcohol again. Ever, 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 ever. How many people have heard this? Drives me freaking crazy. Powerless people, places, and things. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. I swear to God. Don't say that here with me. I'm not going to give you my power. I'm not going to give anybody that power. Because as we start going into the God stuff or the chapter 4 with the agnostics, it's going to tell you about this person, this God maybe, spiritual of the universe, who has all power that I have tapped into. In my experiences, I am powerless over nothing. And let me tell you why. People. I had 11 months sobriety, January 1996, and I was at my sister's house in Wayne, New Jersey, and a beautiful home. And so we were very vicious, and we used to just tear each other up, sarcasm, which means in Greek, tearing of the flesh. So I walked into the kitchen, and I started practicing meditation, and my sponsor made me go in the mirror. I love myself. That was kind of freaky and goofy. But when I did that, I felt really good about myself, and great people started coming into my life. I walk into the kitchen. Something happens. I do something knucklehead. My sister just goes, wow. And I thought there was a knife that came into me. It never hurt me like that before. I even used to have friends say, God, you let your sister talk to you like that? And then I would turn her down, and she would tear me down. I said, whoa. Meeting, town hall meeting, home meeting. And I got my mother, my younger sister, my older sister. And we got into the kitchen. I said, listen, this is the way it's going to work. You will never talk to me like that again. Do you understand me? Never. And if you do, I will never. And as I was about to say, never come back. They're like, oh, just lighten up. And I said, shut the up. You can imagine what I said. I said, if I ever talk to you like that from this point forward, I deserve not to be a loving brother. I love you. That will never happen again. You will see my sons, but it will never happen again. Are we crystal clear? And they're all like, I never stuck up for myself. And I meant it. And I meant it. I am out. So I'm not powerless over people. All right. Places. Am I powerless over places? No offense to New Jersey. I got out when I was 18. Let's just take that one off the list. So I'm not powerless over places, correct? Now, I live in a place where we absolutely despise living. We do. But my children, the youngest one was having little problems in going into eighth grade, and I knew he didn't need psychiatrists. I knew he didn't need Ritalin. I knew he didn't need any of that. He needed a full-time father. Their mother's still a flight attendant, and she's gone a lot with a great nanny that we've had forever, but it was time for me to step up to the plate, and I did, and his whole life has changed. Whole life has changed. AB student, my oldest son's interviewing with Princeton in June. He's in a wrestling tournament right now for the regionals championships in Florida. I mean, and they're great, great, great kids, okay? And the things, you wanna know what that is? I hadn't figured it out for the longest time until I got the new cell phone. And the new cell phone was one of those Palm Pilots. And my God, for 2 years, I hate it. And so I threw it out the window. And I was like, oh. So I'm not powerless over cell phones. Got it? Okay. We are not powerless, folks, over people, places, and things. We are not. You have all power. You could design anything you want in your life. And I'm going to show you how I did it. Okay. In my experience. I'm not crazy. This really does work. Maybe. All right. So now what I'd like you to do is one... three paragraphs down. If you go near the bottom of that paragraph, on the third paragraph, it starts off with "we feel." The first 100 people, it says, "We feel after many years of experience." They always talk about experience. They don't talk about, well, maybe this might work, or hey, how about this theory? It says, "After many years' experience, we have found nothing," and I have that circled, "which has contributed more to the rehabilitation of these men than the altruistic movement, doing good for others without expecting anything in return. The altruistic movement now growing up among them." So if this is the number one thing working with others that's going to keep you sober, I am not going to tell you to wait a year. I'm going to tell you as soon as you do this, and as soon as you do your four step, and as soon as you're finishing up with your ninth and you're doing daily inventory, get out there and grab somebody. Don't give them an excuse. You're coming over to my house. We're going to work on these steps. Good, good. 7 o'clock. See you then. Or do it in the car. You know, that's what I used to do. All right. But then I've been blessed with so many people have been asking me. I just kind of do it in my house now. And we have a lot of people that come over. All right. Does that make sense to everybody? I want everybody to go to the last paragraph on that page. If you go down five lines down, it says, to them, their alcoholic life seemed the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontent. Has anyone ever felt like that in here? Right. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. I call it the, there were some times I'd be flying and I screwed up my schedule and I like really couldn't drink, right? And it was like on the second day and I'm just like, you know, in the last leg of the day, I mean, I just got, I mean, I'm, what I used to do to that plane, and you know, and we'd land and the plane would be like, you know, smoking engines. I'd be knocking over flight attendants. I'd be going down the jetway, you know, hats and stripes coming off and jackets. And I'd hit the Exxon station. I'd get my two tall boys and I'd like pour it all over my head. Oh, if everybody just left me alone, it'd be fine. I have no problem. And then I'd go to the drive-thru liquors. And you know, hey, you're home for 4 days, dog. Yeah, woohoo, 2 gallons this time. All right. So that was me. And then it says here, drinks which he sees others taking with impunity, meaning without a problem. And I used to watch people, non-alcoholics, drink, and I'd be like, huh, how come I can't do that? I always black out, you know, 100% of the time. It says, after they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops. The phenomenon of craving develops. That's where the first drink gets you drunk. Got it? That's where the first drink gets you drunk. You get the first drink, you go through that long process, phenomenon of craving kicks, you're done, finished, over, all right? Once the phenomenon of craving develops, don't even try to stop. You're going to be restless, irritable, and discontent until you're done. All right, I want you to go down to the first paragraph on that page that we just read, and it says here, one sentence down, once the psychic change has occurred, and the psychic change we're trying to do here today is by working the 12 steps. That's why you want to give these guys the shot of God as fast as possible. Or if you don't want to call it God, call it the psychic change, universal supreme being, whatever. Really doesn't matter. So it says, once the psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed and who had so many problems, he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself, and this is the word, recovered. Finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being the required to follow a few simple rules, and that means the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Got it? That's a contingency. You want to feel that great? Work the steps. Help others. Okay? Sound good? All right. I want you to turn to the next page. One, two, three, fourth paragraph. On the fourth paragraph, starts off with all these. Says, all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing, and there it is again, circle, phenomenon of craving. The phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be a manifestation of an allergy which differentiates people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. Welcome. You are a distinct entity. You have a secret handshake. My wife doesn't know it. Neither will she ever find out about it. All right, we keep it secret between us. Got it? So now, as you see, I'm telling this person, phenomenon of craving, phenomenon of craving, phenomenon of, and if he's looking at me like with this, then he's a hard drinker. Okay? Other people will look at me like, dude, I'm with you 100% on this one. Got it? So this is what we're doing. We're getting them through. We're getting them through. We're getting them through. And we're just going through the pages. We're also on Bill's story. Turn to Bill's story. Now, if I wanted to read Bill's story, who I thought was a loser and I had nothing in common, right? Which I find out I have everything in common. He was a huge winner. But if I wanted to read his story, I would just listen to your story. So bypass that. Now, what I do, how are we doing on time? Doing good on time? 20 minutes ago. 20 minutes ago. Good. And then we're going to take a break. I want you to turn into a page. You may not have heard this. There is a solution. There's a solution. As y'all say here, forget about it. Did I do good? Forget about it. Right. I've been down south for 28 years. People still think I have a New Jersey accent. Do you think I have a New Jersey accent? New Jersey, forget about it. My sisters, hey, dog, you want some coffee? You doll. You doll, forget about it. And what does nothing for nothing mean? Nothing for nothing. I'm like, did I used to say that? Nothing for nothing? Okay. Is that like butt? No, it's nothing for nothing. Forget about it. Okay. All right. So we have, there is a solution. Are you ready? promise me none of you will say this in a meeting. Good. First paragraph, second sentence, third sentence, underline, nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I have solved the drink problem. How big would I be? How big would I be? There'd be coffee everywhere. Right? My name's Doug. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Forget about it. Man, Jersey people are tough. So anyway, that's the third sentence they have in this paragraph. We have a solution. Oh my God, there is a solution. And nearly all have recovered. They have solved. What if you solve something, what is it? You're done? You've solved the drink problem. I will show you the difference between recovered and cured. Okay? But they have solved the drink problem. All right. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to go down to the last paragraph on that page. It says, and I want you to go this. Box that in and write Big Book is a solution. And it's going to tell you right here that the Big Book is a solution. The tremendous fact. We all like facts, don't we? I love facts. For every one of us. How many people we have in here? About 400? Oh, 300? Okay, so we have about 300 people here. All right, my wife's going, exaggeration for Doc Lissa. We have a whole bunch of people in here, and can any of us agree with that for lunch? I mean, really. The first 100 right here, just say this. It says here, the tremendous facts for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. I can't even agree what to do for breakfast. And upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. Action, folks. This is the great news. This book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Okay? They all agree that this book is a solution. So let's find out what's going on page 19. Page 19, first paragraph, third sentence. Page 19, first paragraph, third sentence. We, the first 100, feel that the elimination of drinking is but a beginning. The elimination of drinking is but a beginning. So if they, the first 100, feel that the elimination of drinking is but a beginning, why am I telling you not to drink and just go to meetings? Just stay at the start. Don't move past the start. It's amazing how low alcoholics aim. You know, I have to say, I have been blessed with not being very bright. And I say that with respect to me because I don't know when to be afraid. So I will go out on these huge ventures. My wife's like, pass it out. And I will roll the dice and risk everything financially. Now, of course, it's very I'm very methodical on how I research and what I do. But we're talking, you know, large digits, and it's just like, we did it in the kitchen. I did it, and $750,000 later, I was like, maybe this might not work. She's looking at me like, are you? She got a job at University of Virginia, and she was going to start working there. And she looked at me, and we were going to be separated from each other. And it was just, you know, I'd have to commute up there. And she says, do you believe with all your heart that this is works? I'm like, absolutely. Absolutely, I believe. And then the economy turned, and poof, this thing went through the roof. So because I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, and because I was showing this unbelievable God, do I believe God comes, okay, well, you're blessed, and you're not blessed, and I think I'll just save your $750,000, and you go bankrupt, and you know what I mean? I don't believe that. I believe that our inner selves truly believes in the right. The first thought is the right thought. You know, do it. Stop questioning yourself. Stop thinking yourself. Sponsoring smart people is a pain in the ass. I'm telling you that right now. It is difficult. You know, how could I be that? I'm on Wall Street making $9 million a year. Yeah, but look at you. You're a mess. Yeah. Wasn't that you that just pooped yourself over there in the corner? All right, so it says here, it says, we feel the elimination of drinking was but a beginning, a much more important demonstration, meaning the 12 steps, of our principles. So from this point forward, when they talk about principles, they're going to talk about the 12 steps. That's what they mean. Principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs, right? You want to see how healthy someone is? Go into their house. Talk to their wife. I could have her come up here, right? See how they operate in business, all right? Sometimes do I lose my temper? Absolutely. Sometimes it just gets so just, you know, and I'll pop. Will I not? Never at the employees, ever, ever. It's always upper management, and that's why they make the big bucks. And then I'm done, and things start getting back into place or the way I think it should be. And then it's okay. Then it's good. You know what I mean? And that happens. I'd love to tell you I'm this, you know. Yeah, I'm not. I'm very honest, though, but I'm not like that Gandhi guy. So, it says here, if you go down to the first, second, the third paragraph, it says, we have concluded, the first 100 people have concluded to publish an anonymous volume setting forth the problem as we see it. We shall bring the task and combined experience and knowledge. This should suggest, and here it is, we talked about the fellowship before, circle program. Program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem. So now they're going to start getting into the program. We're going to start getting into the steps. Make sense? All right, what I want you to do is turn to page 20. At the top of the page, first sentence, it says, our very lives, this is a life and death deal. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers, not recovering alcoholics, depends upon the constant thought of others and how we may help their needs. Think about that. Your very lives is on helping others. So do me a favor, wait a year before you start thinking about others. Doesn't it just contradict everything this book says? And they don't just say it once, okay? So let's go to, I want you to go to the second, the first paragraph, go down about four lines, and it says, we, being the first 100, about four lines, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may be asking, what do I have to do? They will answer it in the next paragraph always. When the big book asks the questions, they're going to answer it. Let's see if they do. It is the purpose of this book to answer questions vaguely. Oh, wait. Specifically. Okay? So they're going to answer that question specifically. So why do I have to work my own program, cowboy? Good genius. You know what I mean? I don't work my own program. I work this checklist. Let's go down to the first, the second, the third, fourth, the fifth paragraph. Now, I want you to do this. Put this line and put three types of drinkers. Here we go. Ready? You're going to love this. Three types of drinkers. First one, moderate. Let's see. I want to see if anyone here is a moderate drinker. Where's the young man? Is he gone? I piss off everybody. Don't worry about it. I was just looking at his mother. Moderate drinker. Here we go. Are you ready? It says, moderate drinkers have little trouble giving up liquor entirely. Well, if I want to stop there, it's no, that's not for me. So it says, if they had a good reason for it, they can take it or leave it alone. Can anybody here take it or leave it alone? Good. All right, let's go to the next paragraph. Ready? Then we have a certain type of box-in hard drinker, too. Hard drinker. It sounds like us. Watch this. It's going to sound just like us. Ready? He may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. That was me between 14 and 15. It may cause him to die a few years early before his time. But check this out, and this is where I have it underlined. If a sufficient strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can circle stop or moderate. All right? So, I'm flying for this airline and I'm a captain. I'm 31 years old and I have to go through flight physicals every 6 months. So I'm in Crystal City where we're based out of. Did I just give it up? Well, anyway, so I'm in Washington where we're based out of and I'm seeing the flight surgeon and he goes, golly, he says, your white blood count is through the roof. And I said, wow, really? He says, yeah, it's through the roof. I said, well, yeah, I had the flu. Last week, all right? I had the flu last week. And so he goes, okay, that's cool. Listen, we're just going to do other tests, but, you know, here's your first class medical, and off you go. So I'm in Texas, I point to you probably from like Brooklyn, but you took a vacation in Texas, so you're from Texas now. So I'm in Texas. I'm in Texas, and I'm in a hotel room, and I get a phone call. Hi, this is so-and-so airline scheduling. Captain Muir, you need to be seen with the flight surgeon up in Washington. I was like, okay, cool, when? They're like, now. We have you positive space on the 450 flight. Positive space means I bump off passengers. Of course, the union let me do that. I got to sit first class and, you know, all this great union stuff. So wonder why we're going out of business. So I fly up there and I'm thinking to myself, what am I thinking? Woohoo, no work. I get paid. Union contract protected. And I walk in and there's the doctor and the nurse. I'll never forget this. And the nurse is doing something cleaning. He looked at me. He goes, I don't care what you tell me. He goes, you have a drinking problem and you drink a lot. You're getting cirrhosis of the liver. 31 years old. So what do? I sit on this, whatever they call that thing, and I look at him, and I'm thinking, ooh, how am I going to get out of this one? And I said to him, well, really? He says, yep. And I said, hypothetically, if I was to continue to drink, how much time would I have to live? And they both turned to me, and they said, you're fucking kidding me. Both of them at the same time. And I looked at them, and I went like this. Ballpark figure. So he said 45. I'm 46. He said 45, so I'd be dead. So what am I thinking? Holy yes. And so I'm sitting there like, I said, all right. He says, okay, here's Captain so-and-so with the, you know, rehabilitation at the airline. And yeah, I need to go talk to somebody. Are we cool? Oh, yeah, we're cool. Okay, good. Thanks. You probably saved my life. I really appreciate it. You know, I just kind of just humbled it up and got my ass out of there. Well, I'm in the car going, 13 years here. And there's this place in Crystal City I used to come in, right? And I'd walk in and I'd be drunk sometimes. So I wouldn't even take off my stress. I'd be like, I got 13 years to live. It was like, rock on. Welcome back. Drinks for everybody. So I had a doctor telling me I'm going to die. And I went out and celebrated. So I'm not a hard drinker is where I'm getting at here. All right. But what about, go to the next paragraph. What about the real alcoholic? The real alcoholic on page 21. Circle that. He may start off as a moderate drinker, 14 to 15. He may become a continued hard drinker up until about 26. But at some stage of his drinking career, folks, I really need to get this straight. If you're calling drinking a career, you may have a problem. As my wife would say, un poco, ah. Un poco. All right. He begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts drinking. They should put a comma there. I lost all control of consumption once I started drinking. Follow me? Sound good? Turn to the next page. I want you to go down to the bottom of the last paragraph on page 22. Three sentences down, it says, we, the first 100 people, are equally positive. Here we go again. They're all positive again. We can't even find out what we're going to do for breakfast tomorrow. We're equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens both bodily craving and mentally obsession, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. Did that happen to everybody here? It happened to me. Okay. So now this is how I'm taking this guy through the first step. And he's going, I got it. We're like, nah, man, I was able to have a few and stop. That blows me away. So I keep going. And when if he's still saying that, I'm like, dude, you're out. You're not allowed in my clubhouse anymore. I kick him out of the tree fort. He's gone. Because I don't want him hurting you. All right? It says here, this observation would be academic and pointless. Our friend never took the first drink. Never took the first drink. Thereby setting in the terrible motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than the body. Okay. So that's why, as Chris was saying, when you do all these pills and you take all these pills and you try not to drink, and I got these two pills where you could take and you could drink four drinks or two drinks, whatever that is, it's not working on the mind. So now you're taking pills and you're a crazy freaking maniac. You know what I mean? It's all up here. And God helps us to get that calmness, that peace that Peter was talking about. Okay. I want you to turn to page 24, first paragraph. And I have this highlighted. The fact. I love facts. The fact that most alcoholics, for a reason yet obscured, have lost the power of choice. Folks, if I had the choice whether to drink or not. As much as I love you, I would not be here today in Vermont at 14 degrees. I would be in my beautiful home in Sarasota on the beach with my wife. Right? Trying not to drink. Just not drinking. Because I choose not to drink. Might smack her around or beat her up, but, you know, I choose not to drink today. I got sobriety. Right? I have lost that power of choice. I have lost the power of choice to drink. That's the fact, period. Bottom line, it says here, and I love this, our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring in the consciousness with sufficient force and memory and suffering of the humiliation of a week or a month ago. I love people. I come to AA to keep it green. Whatever that means. I guess it means like, oh, so I can remember when I pooped myself or when I peed myself in a bar and then fell off a bar stool, but went in the next day. So if that didn't stop me, why would keeping it green or blue or purple, whatever you call it, would keep me sober? It won't keep me sober. Do you see what I mean? It says it right here. Keep it green, whatever. All right. And then on page 25, right-hand side, first comp, there is a solution. There is a solution. I'm going to go over this, and then we're going to pause. There is a solution. Almost none of us like self-searching. That's steps 4 and 10. The leveling of pride, which is step 1. The confession, step 5, of shortcomings, 6 and 7, which the process requires for its successful consummation. If you have not done this, folks, you have not done the steps, you have never failed. Good news. But if you have not done this, you've never done the steps, you're going to keep on drinking, and you're going to be 1, 2, 3, drink, 1, 2, 3, drink. It's that little dance we got going on, okay? So we will pick this up. Why don't we all take a 15-minute smoke break and come on back. We're rocketing through to the fourth dimension. Thanks.